Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast. Today's April 7th. I knew that for some reason, but whatever. Spring is coming. It's really been nice the past few days, man. Blue sky, not a cloud in the sky.
It's nice. So nice. I'm grateful.
Yeah, not fuck that nigga, but definitely fuck my gym. because so this is what happened, right? And maybe it is a fuck that nigga in a roundabout way. So I actually belong to two gyms, Blink and New York Sports Club. But the Blink is very close to where I live up here in Washington Heights. The closest New York Sports Club is like 30-some blocks away, 40 blocks away, actually. So I was like, let me just join up here, especially when the weather's shitty, so I can get up there. So, well, you know, pandemic comes. So as all gyms do, they're limiting the amount of people that can come into the gym, which I get, right? No problem. And so that you go on the app and you pick a spot, you know, Tuesday, 4:30, you try to find that or whatever. So, but you know, I go there so much that dudes know me and other people the same. I'm not the only person who's doing it. So even if I couldn't get a slot, like on the app, I would go up there and they'd be like, I'd be like, you know, just going in or whatever. So I'd go in, blah, blah, blah. So like last week I went up there on some, you know, trying to get it in. And he was like, nah, B. You can't come in no more. I'm like, what? Not me particularly, but he's like, yo, if you don't have a slot on the app, you can't come in because they're checking it. So what happened was there would end up being a line outside the gym, like sometimes like around the corner. Yeah, because you can only have a certain amount of people in the gym. So it's almost like a club. Like we got to let three in before we can let three out before we can let three in and so on. So somebody went up there. I suspect it probably was a white cat. Somebody went up there and beefed because they was like, yo, I had a spot for, like, say, Thursday at 6. Why do I have to stand on this line? And they're like, yo, because we're letting three in. He's like, nah, Beam, I got a spot for 6 o'clock. I'm supposed to be able to walk in here at 6 o'clock if I'm on time and go right in. So your man wrote a letter to corporate.
Come on, write a letter.
Come on, write a letter to corporate.
I just want to say, I just want to say.
You ain't really mad at him.
That sounds like me. Like that's some very me shit right there. I don't know if that was a white guy.
It might not have been. Could have been somebody else. Yeah, let me take that back because it might not have been a white guy.
Because I will write a motherfucking letter. You gonna get an email. We're gonna put this on
management.
The record. Yeah,
that's on management. The first time they had to make like a line, they should have cut that shit out.
And you know, it probably wasn't a white guy, like, in retrospect, because there's not really many white people that go to the gym. It's basically all Dominicans, because that's the neighborhood I live in. But, yeah, and you know, especially, like, a month or so ago, like, the weather was still shitty. It would be raining and cold, and you standing on the line. So corporate hit management, and was like, yo, what's really good? Why do you have these lines outside? And so they deaded the whole... So, yeah, so that's dead. So I might even just, because, you know, the spots go quick. So I'm like, and maybe I could make it at 4 o'clock, but I wanted to come at 5. So I've been going all the way back down to Harlem to work out, which actually means.
Yeah, I mean, I actually canceled my membership this week at Lifetime. I sent the official email.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you can dead that, man. Like, I went one time just to kind of see what the vibe was like and kind of what the process and procedures are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a little bit of a ghost town, you know, a lot of shit that I would have wanted to do. You can't really do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You still had a couple people, you know, not really adhering to, not being an asshole about it, but just not adhering to, like they weren't like, you can tell they were not purposefully on some, I'm not wearing my mask shit, but mm-hmm. just like they might have pulled it down and put some water on, took a little bit longer to put it back up.
Or got the train back halfway down and nose was out.
Because to be honest, especially if you're older, those masks are very difficult to breathe if your heart rate is up. It can, you know. Mm-hmm. So I did a workout, man, and, you know, I was like, I'm not even, normally I do the whole shower routine because, you know, Lifetime is nice, man. Yeah, I go in the steam room.
They got good lotion.
They got great lotion. They got the lotion with the cologne and that shit. And I was feeling Lifetime, but after, you know, I can't justify that number every month to not really be going. And I can get a solid workout at the crib. And it's not about to be nice. I'm probably never going to go there. And I bought a bike.
Yeah, that's my thing. See, when the weather really breaks, I work out, like I was saying before, and I was working out at the Yankee Stadium and ride my bike. So I think I'm a dead blink, maybe re-up, or maybe just put it on pause or whatever.
I was going to say, you could freeze it, because that's what I did last year. And my freezing time just ran out. So that's why I was just like,
I think I'm a freezer. So yeah, so whatever with them. You know what, I realized, I don't know if I've, if I didn't tell y'all, I really apologize. I know I haven't told the listeners, but if I haven't told Joe, I don't think I told you, Inca, but if I haven't, I think I told Sean and I, because it might have been before you joined us, Inca, but you know, like my son, Julian's getting married like in a month.
Yeah, you did. You told
me. Yeah. So it's like 30 days. It's like,
yo, you about to be pop out here.
Chill with the wisely.
You got your good suit. I got a suit.
Go ahead, let that scruff grow in. Get it lined up.
I got a new suit. I've only worn it once, so it's really new, like new. But I was actually like, you know, young niggas on me, right? Like, I'm like, do I really want to wear a suit? Like. Cause you know, no. That's what I'm saying. Like, so, you know, Julian, they newfangled with it, right? So it's like, you could dress nice, just wear a shirt and khaki, whatever. I'm not doing that, right? But I was like, oh, do I really want to wear a hard body suit? I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Dude, they got so many different angles you could go with the suit because it's gonna be warm.
It's gonna be warm, exactly.
You go no tie. You could rock it with one of your, one of five Shiriaki Mizuki sneakers or whatever you be having.
I don't think this suit would nobody look good with
got. Nah, listen, what I'm trying to tell you.
Oh, I can go buy some.
If you get the right combo, you could do it with the sneakers. You can't, obviously, you can't really OD, but you could definitely do it with the sneakers. And now they're selling suits that are almost like this combination of like a sweat look.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
It's wildly informal.
Yeah, and but comfortable.
It still gives you a comfortable, crisp, clean look. Mm-hmm. And you know what I'm saying? Like to me, even if you went with the suit, it's all about your material. If you're gonna rock it with the sneakers and all that sort of shit, like you ain't gonna be in there with no tweed on.
Yeah, no.
Motherfucking April and June anyway, right? So
You
could definitely rock something light.
All right, so offline, we talk about it, if we figure it out. But so I just wanted to give my son a shout out. He's getting married in basically 30 days.
Congratulations.
Life keep moving, bro. You can't stop the trains. You can't stop it.
Hey.
You ride or you get off. If you get off,
other.
You can't get back on, so. Just keep riding. And that's my old nigga talk for the day. I wanted to mention, keep it kind of light still. I wanted to mention, it's a really good kind of podcasty show that I've been starting to watch a bit. Naomi Campbell has a podcast, but there's a lot of stuff is on YouTube as well. And it's really good. It's really, like, really well done. Obviously, like, she's Naomi Campbell, so she gets, it's called No Filter with Naomi. She gets, whoever. Like, this week was Dave Chappelle. Like, she gets, whoever she wants, but she travels the world a lot on the podcast. Like, she's, Naomi's, she's, what's her name, about 54 now? 53-ish, right? About that?
Somewhere.
She's been in the game for easy 30, I think more than that, probably more like 35 years. She's been a top model since the 80s. So she's traveled the world more times than she counts. She knows everybody in all these different countries. She was engaged to a Russian oligarch for a little time. So she, you know, but she's really tapped into a lot of different worlds. She's very, very involved in Africa, the different countries in Africa. I think, well, she's Jamaican by heritage, but she goes, she's got like tons of friends and family in Africa. And so it's just very interesting, you know, because the way her watch her kind of move around the world and navigate these different, you know, these different kind of worlds very comfortably, because obviously she's from England. She's got people there. Like, she's just, she's actually super dope, man. And she seems to be very comfortable with herself and who she is. And, you know, she's not on, you know, not on, you know, because she's talking to people that are either friends or peers. So she's not on no bullshit. You know, she's not fronting on nobody. I suggest it, though. I suggest it. Like, it's a very, very good watch. Very good watch. But,
I heard,
you know,
about that. I want to check it out.
Yeah, it's good.
Time for like new media.
And she's been doing it for a year, so there's like several episodes.
Oh wow!
Yeah, she's actually the Dave Chappelle episode is her 1 year anniversary. So she she's got a lot of content up. So I highly suggest it. Anyway, I don't want to just be the hog the whole shit. Y'all got
I
any
had a shout out.
Go.
I do. I want to give a shout out to the
to Ivy.
Of course, Ivy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Ivy. Don't lose your
newest genre of fast food obsession, the chicken sandwich that everybody is coming out with. I think I've tried all of them at this point.
Okay. So let's run them.
Popeyes, okay.
KFC.
Popeyes, KFC, original Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A, of course.
McDonald's has a new one.
Okay.
Burger King has like the cute, like tender crisp one. That's
okay.
Not bad.
Now, did you do the flounder from Popeyes yet?
I did. It's
okay. Different. You did the flounder too? Okay. Let's run them and rank them.
Okay. This is tough. I almost don't want to count Chick-fil-A because they've always been around. That's a good thing.
Because it's kind of like they're the
OG. I'm mad at it.
Just like, right. It is what it is.
Hi, Naima. Naima's here.
Exactly. Hey, Naima.
We were just talking about all of the chicken sandwiches.
Inca's about to rank the chicken sandwiches.
This is
right up Nye's alley.
Completely on my alley, because McDonald's just did a new one.
That's what she's saying.
Another new one. They keep trying. McDonald's keeps trying to get this chicken sandwich game, and they really haven't been able to get anything to stick since the first McChicken, which is now like completely trash. Like, it's on the dollar menu now. The original McChicken is, I think.
Piece of my man too. I think his name is Lucas, the Spanish cat that does the Spanish imitations on IG. He was like, "Yeah, Ricky, go give me a junior chicken for me, Donald." Yeah, but anyway, I'm sorry, break up because I don't know and I don't eat them. So I
didn't prepare for this, but okay. I will say the KFC one bangs. I was not expecting it to bang.
The KFC's lit.
KFC, the new KFC one.
Now tell me, tell us why it's lit. Like, tell us why. Break it down.
Okay, so the Popeyes one is really good, but I can
find it. No, we're talking about KFC right now.
I'm trying to give you the reason.
He hates background and context so fucking much.
I do.
This nigga be like, cut to the meat. Go ahead, Nick, set it up.
The Popeyes one is too wet. KFC made dry enough. You can have like a moist, good piece of chicken.
Pause.
But you can also have like a piece of chicken that's too wet.
I think the Popeyes one is only that if you get the spicy because you got this. There's a sauce on it. Right?
You still get the mayonnaise with the regular one,
yeah,
right?
It's not that
I don't
much.
Know. I didn't try it. But anyway, I KFC edged out Popeyes just a little bit.
Not because of the sauce, or because of the pickles, because the
sauce is the same, and they all have pickles.
So it's just the chicken in and of itself.
It's just the chicken.
Was better.
I like it a little crispier than Popeyes.
Okay.
Popeyes is like a giant ass piece of chicken. The portion on the KFC one is good.
Just right. So KFC one, Popeyes is two?
Popeyes are very close to.
Wait, but have you had the Chicken Shack from Shake Shack?
Not really.
Yeah, but that's special.
But when
too,
I
like,
had it, it wasn't like...
No, because they ain't got Shake Shacks across the country. Like, everybody can't get that.
Yeah, we don't have that.
But it's amazing.
No, no, I'm not saying it ain't good. I'm saying like that's like, but it's like, you know, that's, you can't get that like in Cleveland. You know what I'm saying?
I will say I didn't love like whatever sauce they put on there.
Okay.
At Shake Shack.
Now, so what about the McDonald's one?
It's trash. It should be
it's
in
trash.
The
it's now, what about what about the burger?
Oh, hold on, hold on. I gotta say something. I gotta say something about the McDonald's.
And they're gonna pop in
because they had an excellent grilled chicken sandwich that had this that. This almost like light Dijonnaise sauce that kind of went on there. Mm-hmm. That was my shit. That was my go-to. Okay, and then I get back, like, every time they have something that's, like, perfectly in snack mode, like, I'm not going to be overly full. I can kind of eat this at about 1 o'clock. I don't feel incredibly guilty, right? Like, I could still, you know, eat dinner properly. They take the shit off the menu.
They discontinue like, it's mind-boggling. They can't upsell it. Like, if you come there for one thing at McDonald's, that's not a good item to them. They want the thing that you want with the fries and
with the combo.
And the combo.
I haven't ordered. I'm old school. I be telling niggas no salt and make my fries fresh, baby. Old school.
Yeah, not the drink.
I'm always fucking up the drive through. I promise you, if somebody's fucking up the drive through at McDonald's,
this is John. Okay,
it might be me because I told him don't put no salt on my fries.
Throwing the whole shit, throwing the whole operation
shit
off.
Line backed up, niggas honking.
Yeah. Come on, nigga.
McFlurry, McFlurry running down the side of the cup.
Worse. And so, wait, Inga, anyway. So what was the other, how was Burger King's?
The Burger King, like, they just got rid of, I think, the Tender Crisp one, and that was a mistake, because that one jammed.
That was bad.
Whatever the new one is whack. As bad as the new McDonald's.
But the Tender Crisp one, the one that was like, it wasn't a regular, Burger King used to have a chicken sandwich that was almost like,
the old
wasn't joint? A regular round, say it was the oval joint. Was that the Tender Crisp joint?
No. They had one after that before the Popeyes one came out.
I need to do a chicken sandwich tour. Wait a minute now.
I inadvertently did this, I realized, over the last like 6 or 7 months. Like, I was like,
I'm about to put out an official ranking and report card. all that. I'm with this.
Don't be silly like me. I'm about to be 40 and I really need to get sexy and stop eating chicken sandwiches.
Nah, no, you don't ever need to stop eating chicken sandwiches. Stop playing yourself, first of all.
You're black.
Fair. But also, like, the thing about, because I have a chicken sandwich and a chicken biscuit affinity. Like, these are my things. And a good chicken biscuit is very hard. It's very hard to do.
What do you think about the Chick-fil-A joint?
So Chick-fil-A's chicken biscuit is good because it's Chick-fil-A's. The chicken part is good. Their biscuit is not great.
The biscuit needs a little work. You're right.
Needs work, but it gets over because it's the Chick-fil-A chicken, right? Mm. And it's not really a different chicken than the chicken sandwich if you want to keep it a buck.
It's not. It's just smaller.
Right. So back in the day, my hack used to be I would go to KFC and get their chicken tenders and some KFC biscuits and just take the chicken tenders and put them in the biscuits, right? I have also done that with Popeyes. But you can't get a great chicken biscuit in New York. McDonald's chicken biscuit is meh.
The Popeyes in every airport always has breakfast.
Yes,
and they do a chicken biscuit.
The Popeyes.
Yes. I almost missed the flight, fucking with that one.
Yo, every time I go through Hartsfield, Atlanta, because the king of the chicken biscuit is Bojangles, and every time I go through Hartsfield, Atlanta, to connect for anything, my ass is going in the terminal with the Bojangles trying to get me a goddamn chicken biscuit. Hardee's has a good one too, but that's south.
Yeah, I miss Hardee's.
We're gonna do a follow up on this. I'm on it.
Y'all gonna
compare notes. So I'm vegan. Sorry,
I'm gonna be in Maryland at some point in May. So
okay, so let's sketch
anyone I haven't tried. I think I'm gonna go back to Shake Shack and just make sure.
Get the Shake Shack Chicken Shack. I'm telling you, because you know what it is. It's like the thing about Chick-fil-A's chicken sandwiches. What we love about it is that it's simple, right? It's bun, it's toasted. It's a little buttery. You got the pickle. You got the chicken. Like, that's it. Like, it's very focused. And Popeyes has a lot more on it. Chicken Shack is, like, somewhere in the middle. So like the bun is just the right softness. The chicken cutlet is like nice and big, and it's got lettuce and mayo and the pickles, and it's just, it's delicious though. It's an amazing sandwich.
We're gonna check it.
I'm ready.
Like I said, I'm an outsider now. I'm a vegan, so
full vegan. How's it going?
It's going pretty good, actually. I ain't cheated. I ain't no cheating or nothing like that. I had a little vegan Philly cheesesteak sandwich today. It was what it was. You know what I'm saying?
But that shit was trash, bro.
I mean,
it doesn't sound like you enjoyed it at all.
I mean, it was pretty. It was decent.
This nigga was sitting in a park bench. This nigga was sitting in a park bench, mad as a motherfucker. Hardboard ass sandwich.
Oh man.
Yeah, damn. That's my problem. I enjoy food too much for veganism. Every time I try, like, there's a fast that I do sometimes that basically is a vegan fast, and it's too hard because I'm a person whom, and it's kind of my mama's fault because I did not grow up in the you gonna eat what's on your plate house. I grew up in the you can pick what you want to eat, but then you better eat it house. But I am motivated by what I want to eat, not by hunger. So I'm that bitch that'll be hungry, and if I can't figure out what I want to eat, I won't eat. Or I can have food in the house, but it's not what I have a taste for, and I'll just be a hungry bitch. And yeah. It's silly. But so for me, so trying to eat for fuel, I could do it when I was like running and stuff, but in my regular day-to-day life, I eat for enjoyment. I'm a greedy bitch. Like I'm like I got my mouth set for something. I need something sweet.
Well, I had my mouth set for a vegan Philly cheesesteak, bro.
No, you did. Nobody has their mouth set for a vegan Philly cheesesteak. That's not a thing.
Hey, man, y'all just support me, man, because I'm in this thing to win this thing.
We got you. We know, listen, in your 70s is tight. We got you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm 73 years old now. The doctor told me I need to stop all that. I'm real nervous. I mean, you know, gossip depending on, you know, vaccines and how things go, blah, 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 blah. I'm real nervous if by chance I get to go to any cookout this summer. I'm nervous because what I'm going
to
do?
You're going to have to bring your own food.
And that's trash.
Yeah, you're going to ask for a little corner of the grill. You're going to put your veggie store on there.
And my tips.
Hey, nigga, you know. You know. You better go eat that potato salad and sit down.
I can't do that. I can't eat this is mayonnaise.
Oh, it's mayonnaise. Oh, you got eggs.
You gotta eat before you go then.
I can't eat shit.
Hey, y'all, I'll give Uncle Jeff some green salad.
There you go. with some Italian dressing.
He can't have no potato salad, no pot salad, no coleslaw. No. He can't have no mac and cheese.
He can't have a Caesar salad.
He can't have a Caesar. He got to ask what's in the greens because everybody cooks it with at least like some turkey. You gotta come with a Tupperware.
You gotta come full, nigga.
You just come in to talk shit. You can eat some vegan salad.
I'm gonna eat my vegan Philly cheesesteak before I get there.
Yeah, eat it before because niggas gonna clown you if you try to eat that on site.
Total clown.
Why you eat that? Don't smell like nothing.
I know. Don't smell like shit. I got one more quick shout out. Peace to Cameron. He did his Drink Champs this week last week with Nori. It was really, he did a really good interview, man. Cam is such an enigma to me, man, because he's like this like super Harlem dude, but
he's such a great guy.
Yeah, he's like really, really funny, but he's like kind of an asshole too. But he's real smart. He's just kind of like all these things. And he always has frustrated me as an artist because I think just talent-wise, he could like rap, maybe be top 10 as far as just his talent. But
He clowns too much.
I think he's just kind of lazy at certain points or uninspired. And he just got into making money because he signed it. Jimmy, he signed it. So
I blame Dame.
He kind of went over there and like kind of like, didn't do what he could have probably done as far as his skills go. That doesn't mean he can't still rap crazy, but like he could have been, I think, even better. But you know, but anyway, the interview is really good, and he did something really smart that I think more people should do when they go on Nori. He did not drink. They kept offering him drinks. He was like, nah, I'm good. I'm not drinking. I'm not smoking. So his mind was very clear. And Nori has this thing. It's very frustrating because Nori always cuts people off and doesn't. He'll ask you a question and you'll be answered the question and he'll just cut you off and go somewhere else. He's like, you're like, nigga, I didn't even answer the question. But Cam kept bringing it back. He'd be like, nah, I'm going to answer the question that you asked me. So, like, the things right. that Nori did weren't kind of working with Cam. And there's a mutual respect there, too. So, anyway, I just enjoyed the interview. It was very interesting. And he talked about everything, you know, his beef with Jay-Z, his beef with Nas, Jimmy. Blah, blah. So, I just wanted to shout that out. Anyway, y'all, any more shout-outs, y'all got?
I feel like I want to shout out Mom and Mr. Eric.
Hey!
They're listening. Mr. Eric. Eric had a procedure.
Is he doing all right?
He's good. It's the first time he's ever, you know, it's the first time he's ever gone into surgery at, so a 75-year-old black man having surgery for the first time.
Oh, that no, he was scared. Bam.
Mom said he took a flashlight to the hospital just in case. I was like,
flashlight?
A flashlight. Look at Sean.
What, in case the power go out?
Never know.
The surgeon might have needed a, I don't know.
Like he needed the light. That's some old.
It's something about old black men and flashlights. I don't understand it.
How many flashlights you got in the crib, bro?
Or I probably got three on each level. There's the junk drawer flashlights on the main level. Shit. There's a flashlight in my office.
Yeah.
I have the head joint.
Yes, the head joint. Niggas love, like, my uncle and my grandfather love that head. Eric has one too, the head top. Joint.
Oh, yeah, hit the head joint.
Yeah.
And then you have the
magnifying glass that has a light attached to it, too. That was popular with my people.
I think you gotta be 55 to buy those in the store.
I ain't there yet. I got the super bright joint though.
That's the one I keep by the bed. My mother had that. That shit was mad. But she kept it by the bed too. Like I was like, Mom, why is this? It was a flashlight.
Trav got one on like his belt.
Wow. You never know.
I do know.
It's noon and we're gonna be back at 2. Everything's fine. We don't need it on our belt.
Right.
All right. Well, peace.
You never know.
So, Eric, we're glad things worked out and the procedure went well. And we're looking forward to seeing you in some, Mr. Eric. Drink a little brown or something, you know?
Yeah, a little brown. Absolutely. A little something.
Talk a little shit. Yeah, talk a little shit. You know, it's all good.
Speaking of which, Boogie Oki's coming back in July.
Oh, okay. Okay. We with that. We with all that. You want to comment on Lynn Patton?
Have we talked about her
very briefly. She had the sunglasses on her head.
During the Trump administration.
Yeah. So Lynn Patton was a NYCHA, which is the New York Department of Housing's organization, which is under HUD. She was one of the NYCHA executives here. And for me, she drew my attention. Because every time I saw this woman, who's probably 30-something. I don't think she's that old. 30-something-year-old black
woman.
Is she
that young?
I think maybe early 40s. But
I would have gave her a smooth 51.
I thought she
was. You really look at her, I think the wig and her looks age her, actually. Like, when you really look at her, she doesn't look that old. I'd be surprised if she's in her 40s. I think she's probably late 30s. But every time I saw this woman, press conference, a meeting, fucking news interview, she had on the same blonde wig and stunner shades on her head, like 1998.
Oh, it was very Shadow Boat Ride. Very Shadow.
It was like, wearing your sunglasses on top of your head as a headband, right? And I could see it if, like, you had one bad wig or one bad wig day. But every time. Or if it was 1998. So I started looking for photos of her, right? I actually have a whole, if y'all follow me.
You did a whole thread, right?
Back. But yeah, I did a whole thread.
Oh, you got your shit back?
I got my shit back. Thank you to my people. But I'm basically, and I hope this isn't offensive for me to say this, I'm basically in the Twitter version of the DC sniper era, because the thing about takedowns is that there's no timing to them. It's not like they do them at the top of every quarter or once a month. Like, it's random, and you never know what music they're coming for. Like, my hits that I got for this last suspension were all more than a year old. So I have so much music on my account. Like, folks at Twitter are suggesting I try to delete it. I'm like, that shit is gonna be like, I'm gonna have to spend hours a day on it.
Takes forever, yeah.
Yeah, and I still may not find it all. But, you know, the reality is, because of that, I could get hit again at any time. But they said that the next time I get suspended, I might lose my account for
like it's over.
So if y'all don't follow Still Naima, which is my backup, y'all should. But anyway, I've just kind of, it is what it is at this point. But anyway, so if you follow me, I have a whole thread on her where I looked up like all her past looks, what she did. So she started as, she was like Eric Trump's wedding planner. I don't know how the affiliation started, but she was Eric Trump's wedding planner. And of course, like, because they were just offering jobs to random people in the administration, they brought her into the administration. I guess they figured, well, we got black person is at HUD. That's the black people department. You go work
there. Yeah, you go over there with them.
And like, she staged this whole thing where she stayed in a NYCHA apartment for a week.
Yeah, or something like that. I remember that bullshit.
To see the conditions for herself. But anyway, even the congressional hearing, she was kind of, more people started paying attention to her, and they did the SNL skit on her because she showed up to testify at a congressional hearing with them goddamn sunglasses on her.
Glasses on her head.
And I'm like, who raised you? You didn't.
Wearing the glasses like a headband.
Yeah, but it's like, it's so tacky. I hate people who do sunglasses on their head, like an official shit.
Yeah, like, it's a look.
Like,
it's a look.
Why are you on the news with sunglasses on your head? Why are you in a congressional hearing with sunglasses? Bitch, it's not actually a headband. And she also always wears like one of these little capelet jackets where the arms are split down the sleeve.
Oh,
like,
yeah. She has a uniform
and some like boots. Like, it is very.
Oh, the
like,
boots. I forgot about the boots.
Like a denim bolero in something that I saw
it's
her.
It's very
and
like it's hateration, holleration, and the stancery, and I don't understand.
She's like, I'm never leaving this era.
I even found pictures of her with a baseball cap on, and she got the sunglasses on top of the fucking baseball cap. Like, whatever. So anyway, she was, as was everybody in this administration, she was violating the Hatch Act, which is when you use your position in a federal department and then to advance like certain agendas for profit. In her case, it was, I think, something having to do with Trump properties. And she got fined $1,000, which is not bad, but she can't serve in any federal office for the next 4 years, which makes me happy. Not that I think that anybody is trying to hire any of these motherfuckers to be in another federal office, but also a reminder that you can't do what these white people do. Like,
exactly.
I'm positive that somebody in her life has said, you need to stop following up behind these white people.
She said, no, Kellyanne, my friend.
They're taking care of me.
Kellyanne, my girl. You don't even know. She cool. Kellyanne's living her life in Jersey and ain't get hit with nothing.
Kellyanne violate the Hatch Act like every other day.
On television, she'd be selling shit.
What's her name? Ivana was holding up cans of Goya.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So, peace to Lynn Patton. Good God bless you. I mean, maybe they gave her a little
consultancy or somewhere
to make keep the
they
money going. I don't know.
No, they didn't. They didn't give us shit.
You know
them motherfuckers ain't give nobody
nothing. I know. I wanted to give a solemn, I don't know if shout out is the right term, but a mention to Midwin Charles, who is a lawyer and a presence on MSNBC. She was always on, excuse me, Joy Reid Show. She's on Rachel Maddow. Now Tiffany Cross, Jonathan Capehart, kind of those Sunday shows. Very smart woman, on point, knew her stuff. She passed away maybe two days ago. Don't know what the cause is. Seems suddenly, because she had just tweeted, I think like last weekend or something, like very recently, she was going to see her mom or something, like, and seemed to be fine. Just wanted to say, you know, love to her and her family.
Yeah, I'm seeing salutes to her.
If you go to her page, you know.
You know, yeah, I'm seeing salutes and tributes to her. And I recognize her face, and I definitely have seen her before. I didn't know her. Mm-hmm. But it obviously is always sad, and it's always sad to lose a voice, right? Like, yeah, in a time when we desperately kind of need them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, to any of our people who listen, who knew her and or just, you know, were, you know, impacted by hearing her, you know, our condolences.
It's, yeah, it's sad. I just wanted to mention her. I want, you know what? One more quick shout out I want to give to Scooter Braun. So for those who don't know, Scooter Braun is a music manager. Pretty young guy. He's 30s. He's from Connecticut, went to school at Emory University in Atlanta. And once he got down there, really immersed himself in the Black music scene in Atlanta, was interned for Jermaine, interned, I think, for Dallas at one point, and a bunch of those kind of Luda and those guys, and was a kind of did like club promotions and street marketing. So really, really, like, really came from the mud. Like, he really did it. He was like the only white guy on the street team. Like, he really did it from the bottom up, and earned his respect in Atlanta. And while in Atlanta, stumbled across this kid who could sing, named Justin Bieber, and was just running Justin around town. I remember being in Atlanta way back in like 2008 or 9 in a session, and Scooter came in. Justin probably was like, phew, like 9 years old or something. He's like a kid. He's like, yo, hey, sing. And Justin would just sing. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you just sing whatever song he would sing, and everybody would be like, oh, the Scooter just did that again and again. And he eventually got him signed to L.A. Reid. And obviously the rest is history. But anyway, Scooter built up a huge management company, manages still Justin, Ariana Grande, Demi Lovato. Yeah, somebody else big too. He's got a few big artists. He acquired Taylor Swift's catalog. Makes
real he bought the whole labels catalog.
Yeah, big machine.
He bought Big Machine, I think.
Yeah. And he just sold his company to HYBE, which is the company that owns BTS, Korean company. He just sold his company to them, full on management and everything, for $1 billion. But that's not really that's, I mean, obviously an amazing achievement, but that's not why I'm giving them a shout, because of the money. What I found interesting was what Scooter did was he did the sale, and the sale was shares in the company. Of course, he kept the majority shares, but what he did was he gave shares to all the artists that he managed, even like Asher Roth, who I don't even think he manages anymore, but like anybody who he managed and kind of like helped him get to where he is now, he gave them shares. So basically he got the artist paid for getting him to that space. And I thought that was just a good way to do business. I mean, he still walks away with, I think, like $800 million, which is, come on, you know, what are you going to spend that on anyway? But I just thought it was good business that he showed his artists that he appreciated them, and then just like, yo, I got $1 billion, like, deuces, good luck, y'all. And then I did a little more digging and found out that HYBE did the same thing. So I don't know if Scooter came up with this or he was mirroring them. So HYBE did an IPO, and they're on the Korean stock market exchange. And when they did the IPO, they gave BTS shares. Each member. So the BTS guys, and this sale, it makes the company valuation now $6.4 billion.
That's
nuts. And the BTS guys got shares in the company. So I found that to be interesting. Bro, are you looking at me like you got some you got some questions?
No, No, I mean, I know Scooter. I'm familiar with the story, so it's pretty dope. I didn't realize that the other Korean company, the reason I perked up like that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I'm always interested in people selling shares, particularly in valuations,
mm-hmm.
and how like $6.4 billion for a company like that is ultimately a subjective company, right? Like it's an art company, right? Like that's what I'm always fascinated. Like, how did you come up with that valuation? How did you even, you know, so God bless those people. Hopefully they pay attention and they cash out in time. Mm-hmm. So them stocks don't be, you know, 37 cent and you know, you be trading them shits, you know, for chicken.
Yeah, exactly. So,
God bless.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the initial valuation, of course, the 6.4 is because obviously they merged and now they have this massive, you know, this huge artist roster. You know, I don't know if it's going to stay at 6.4 because, you know, it is all subject to sales and this and touring and da. But I just found it interesting. So I kind of wanted to mention that and, you know, kind of want to keep an eye on if any more companies do that moving forward instead of just kind of like a certain group of people getting shares and everybody else just kind of gets
we can say that right now. It's going to be a certain group of people getting shares
and everybody else getting a smack on the ass.
Everybody else, you
maybe
you,
a little you bonus, gonna, maybe a little bonus.
You niggas going to go eat at Del Frisco's and that's going to be it.
Yeah,
you order, take your order, pictures for the order gram.
Order what you want. Yeah. For tonight, you know.
Tonight only, nigga. And they're going to tell that waiter, put that Louis and put that Macallan 25 away. Nigga. Exactly. That's not coming over here.
E&J and Hennessy. Let's jump into it right away, man. Let's jump into this versus. Ain't no need to save it. So we had a big versus Easter Sunday past. Earth, Wind & Fire, Isley Brothers. Hosted by Steve Harvey, Trilla, and Instagram as well. Excuse me, D-Nice playing the music.
Who is excellent, by the way.
Derek? D-Nice. Derek.
Derek ain't never gonna get no shit like that wrong ever.
Yeah, he knows exactly what to play, when to play, and how to play.
Even his outfit was perfect.
Yeah, his outfit was his fit was dope. He had the hat.
But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's cool. So, it was highly anticipated. I want to start with the good stuff first before we get into anything else. So,
well, there's only a tiny bit of bad stuff. Why don't we just get that out of the way?
Really, just one bad thing.
I want to talk about the good stuff. I want to talk about the music. I want to talk about the outfits that both groups had wore. Earth and the Fire, legendary group. I think they started in 69.
Yeah. Professionally.
Professionally. Yes, in 69. Maurice White, who's the leader of the group, had born and raised in Chicago with his brother Vernine, another brother Freddie, who played the drums as well. All three of them were in the group. Maurice had left Chicago, went to Memphis to work and play at Stax Records, where he really cut his teeth under David Porter and Isaac Hayes. I think him and David Porter actually were very, very close. Maurice is actually an excellent A1 drummer. That was his thing. But of course learned how to, you know, play keys and arrangements and blah, blah, blah. Once he got the guess where he was comfortable with, he decided to start a band of his own, which was again, the group I just said, him and his brothers and several other members, because the group was pretty big, called Earth and Fire. They're signed to Columbia Records, I believe their whole career. You can't even really describe the music because it's definitely like it's further it's black as fuck, but it's like,
are we talking about Earth, Wind & Fire?
Talking about EWF. It's a mixture of like
it's orchestral at the same time. It's very big.
And it's African rhythms. There's little jazz because Vernine is almost like a jazz bass player the way he riffs.
But like also this. Maurice was a jazz player.
Yeah, Maurice could play anything. Like I said,
but he used to be in he used to play in somebody something.
Oh, he played for Ramsey Lewis.
Yes, he played.
Yes, for Ramsey Lewis, and eventually produced Sun Goddess album. Like so, Maurice was a genius. Like, but all of them are geniuses in their own way. Like the thing about Earth, Wind & Fire. And other bands at that time too was like these guys, like were players. So they could literally play anything. Like, you know, they more listened to, and like you said, those bands of that era, most of them listened to jazz in their off time because jazz is such a sophisticated music, and that's how they learned how to kind of riff and play, and then they would transfer that skill into R&B. But anyway, Surfing the Fire, just one of my top groups of all time. I still listen to the shit they do. I listen to it now, and these records are now like 40 years old, and I'm still like, yo, I don't even know how he even thought how to do that.
That's my thing with them, is always they're like they're technically categorized as a funk group, but there's so much more than that. Not, and they get and they get credit for being like the group who took funk kind of mainstream, because it's not like sell out the garden and, you know, do all of that. But they're so much bigger than that. Like, these are, they're like the songs are compositions. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, be 82 parts in this bitch. Yeah. Like,
compositions and complicated.
Yeah, and every member of the group is in the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Yeah. All of them. This nigga, they were, like I said, everybody was dope.
Yeah.
Everybody was dope. There was no slacking. You know what I'm saying? You couldn't be going to be like aight in that group. End up producing The Emotions, Best of My Love, Don't Ask My Neighbors. I don't want, you know, what's the
And also did Denise Williams.
Yeah, Denise Williams, Free. Just incredible. Isley Brothers, born in Cincinnati, Ohio, but they moved to Jersey in like the 50s. So they really more Jersey niggas than Ohio niggas.
There's a lot of Ohio in them.
Oh, they
was brave. They I don't think they moved to Teaneck until they was like young adults.
They moved to Teaneck in the '50s. So
nigga, they was young adults in niggas said in the '50s, like niggas, Ron, them niggas is old.
Them niggas is old. So they moved to Teaneck in the '50s. Again, just can't even really, it's hard to like kind of just describe them, you know, in a short burst, because, you know, you hear church influence. Obviously, Ron is one of the best singers of all time. When they were in their peak, which there were six of them, five brothers, and a brother-in-law.
But the brother-in-law didn't come till later.
Chris Jasper.
Chris Jasper didn't come along till later. I can summarize.
Yeah, but I consider when Chris came in the group, I consider that's when the Isley Brothers sound peaked.
Okay.
They were had hits before that, for sure. Right. But I think when Chris entered the group and they did like 3+3, and now, that's when it Fight the Power, and that's when it like, okay, this we got this. They found a sound as well that was like their sound. Nobody else made records.
I think it was Chris, and once Ernie joined the group, because Ernie wasn't always with them.
Was it Ernie or was it Marvin? Because Marvin was the bass player. He was the, you know.
I think it was Ernie first, because they had Jimmy for a couple years.
I was mad as shit at Steve Harvey for not mentioning that Jimmy Hendrix taught Ernie how to play.
We can't talk about Steve yet.
Oh, you're right. We didn't talk about that yet. Okay,
so they had Jimmy for a couple years. Jimmy left because they didn't have a hit. Right after Jimmy left, they did like Who's That Later. So they started getting hits. Once, and that was when they brought Ernie. But it's but the thing about the Isley Brothers that, first of all, I think is so significant, and I don't think this was pointed out clearly enough, is that there are few groups, and this is where I think that Ron and Patty's affinity for each other comes into play in part, who went from the doo-wop era all the way through the early 2000s, like thriving, keeping, not just still touring, but still putting out new music, like
and putting out new music at a high level of creativity. Like, exactly, their records wasn't just like I was pushing the line. You know, he was pushing the line
exactly. And you know, like Ron Isley is relevant to so many different generations, and you know, they had a Motown era. You know what I mean? Like when they did "This All Heart of Mine," I think that was Motown.
Yeah, it was Motown.
Yeah, they did. Shout, they did Twist and Shout first. You know, like they had massive hits, and again went all the way up to a fucking Bad Boy remix and goddamn whatever the hell that was with a Lil Kim feature. So it's like, how you gotta really acknowledge the mastery in that. But I think what was interesting about putting the two of them next to each other, people were saying, is that the Isley Brothers, you can tell, I don't know this for sure, but my guess is this was more like, we all just started picking up instruments and fucking with them, and we learned the theory on the back end, right? Yes. This wasn't, whereas with Earth, Wind, and Fire, it's like we were band nerds. We played music. We studied the fundamentals. And I think that's the difference in their sound. I compared it to pro ball versus street ball. Like the technical fundamentals versus just like the gut, right?
Yeah.
And the grit. and both like highly performing. Like the Osley's arrangements are it'll be like three songs in one song. Mm-hmm. Like that shit'll take you so many different places. Same with Earth, Wind, and Fire. But there's a difference in where the feel of it comes from. Like I felt like the Elements used to be in the studio and just be like, yo, we'll fuck it up if we added like this whole other, like a whole other horn line over here and blah, 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 you know? So it's like, whereas I feel like the Osleys were almost just like in jam session mode.
Yeah. Well, Earth, Wind, and Fire, like I said, I think their sound is, and then we'll move into the verses, but Earth, Wind, and Fire's sound in general is at the root of it is based more on a jazz thing.
Yeah.
And like you said, the Isley Brothers sound is not based in jazz. It's based in funk and like, you know, soul. Raw soul and raw grittiness. Yeah. But I mean, not to say one is better than the other. It's just they approach it kind of from two different places. But
and EWF is very precise, which is why HBCU bands love WF's catalog. Like when In the Stone came on, I was like, every HBCU drum dance line, they got up at home, they were ready.
Exactly, because them horns in the front. It's funny, man. That was sorry about that. You know, I'm gonna do a little Steve Harvey right now. But when I was watching that versus, because after I went to Morgan, I stayed down in the DMV for a while. I worked down there, and I partied down there. And like that whole, it was just reminding me so much of DC. Like that whole, you could listen to HUR and literally hear those records like in that order, like on DC.
In like the 60s when you were?
Yeah, in the 50s. I was with me, Donny Hathaway, Roberta Flack. Who else was down at that time? You know, Stokely Carmichael.
You and Donnie Simpson was
Donnie didn't go to Howard though. Donnie from Detroit. But you know, we see Donnie in the club. But anyway, yeah, Bob Johnson. I mean, just those records are just giving me like tidal waves of like memories and feelings, you know. But let's get to the verses.
It's interesting that you said you have like memories and feelings attached to the music, because I don't have specific memories attached to those songs. I think going into verses, I didn't think that I was the target demographic, but it's something about being Black that all of that music was in my DNA, and I found myself knowing all the words and singing along.
You've never registered it, but this is something that I think we've lost. This is something I think has been lost over the last generation because of streaming, and because B, everybody has their own little entertainment silos in a household now. You grew up, you listened to whatever the fuck was in the car, you know, whatever was playing in the house.
Mom gave us no music choices.
Right. So. It wasn't even so much an instruction. And I think this is what we lost. Because it's not even so much like parents would sit us down and put us on to some stuff. But mostly it was like we were just absorbing the shit.
It was just organic. You were organically absorbing. Yeah. What's it called? A plant, like osmosis.
Now we have to make a concerted effort. And
make
like
a playlist.
And also, yeah. And also like, this is what Steve was trying to say when he said, "What no genres?" Radio, urban radio formats didn't split until the late 90s, mid to late 90s, when the FCC deregulated some radio laws that allowed like conglomeration to go crazy and all this other shit. So, I've said this before. I could be listening to the radio and have Heavy D, then Regina Bell, then Luther Vandross, and then like Michelle.
And Bobby Brown,
like Hammer, and Bobby, you know what I mean? Like it was all, which is why at 13 I owned an After 7 album. You know what I mean? Like
it was singing Superwoman, like you've been through. Some
it was
shit.
Like hello, John Super. Like I was a freshman
nine
in high
years
school.
Old. Bell
best best of Luca, best of love, like that. That was that I owned. That was my album. I bought it. You know what I'm saying? Like you would not see that now. No, you don't have that. So I think that's enough. But people were saying like Earth, Wind, and Fire is the family cookout, and then the Osleys were for like the card game later on
the evening.
The kids had to go to bed or go somewhere.
Playing bid whist and all that.
The kids were confined to the porch, and all the grown-ups were at the playing cards somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just a little bit, one more thing about the radio thing. I know we're kind of going a little track, but like last, I mentioned the DC thing. The interesting thing about DC was WHR, which is Howard's radio station. They were the number one station in the city across the board, yeah. Like pop, sports, whatever. This black college radio station was the number, yeah. And they only played slow records.
They didn't play the slow jam format, but they didn't play no rap or nothing like that.
So like I'm saying,
their tagline was always like 100 minutes of R&B and no rap. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a whole. So I remember, you know, going to Morgan and like all those PG County and them DC niggas, like that's what they played. That and Go Go. You played like hardcore R&B, Anita Baker or whatever. And they played Go-Go.
I had the benefit, and my experience is probably not unique, but I have the benefit of being the youngest cousin.
So not only am I the baby,
I think my oldest cousin Philip might be like 66.
Wow.
Like he's old. Like
he grown. Right. Like he retired.
I'm getting ready to say, like he about to put his papers in. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. Like, you know, so I'm literally the last. So every, not just functions, just purely being around them. My oldest sister was 19 years older than me. Right. Mm. So that all of that entire sound is all I kind of really knew.
Mm-hmm.
Up until maybe 84, 85, when rap started to really become a thing, I just didn't hear anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and it's kind of funny because I could be in the car now and Jordan knows all of those songs.
Mm.
And not just because of me, but because when she was with my sister, she was, you know what I'm saying?
Like they hearing.
Yes, she was hearing it, and not in this force-fed way.
No,
kind of to Nas' point, like we don't live in sort of the kind of space now where we're integrating and sharing music in a way that is, you know, kind of bonding. Mm-hmm. Like everyone has got your AirPods in, right? Like mm-hmm. I never heard of Alabama Shakes until Jordan told me about Alabama Shakes.
Mm.
And now that's one of my favorite groups.
Right, yeah, she's amazing. Brittany's amazing.
Unbelievable.
I
was even thinking about the fact that, so when Derek, as he was spinning, Derek played Saturday Love like during the break. And I was like, you know, this shit dropped when I was 9. And this was my shit when I was 9. Like, I was 9 years old. Singing
Monday,
and
Tuesday,
I do have to give a Black History shout out for I think about 2 years ago that song was the song that Jeff and Kelly decided they were going to take somebody's points off and Boogie Yoki.
Yes,
he didn't do the sugar.
Yeah, the sugar.
He didn't do the sugar, which is important. That was an important point.
I think Jeff deducted 100 points or something. Yeah, you missed the main part of the song. But anyway, so let's move on to the actual verses. Like, what did y'all think of the verses, you know, the show, I guess, for lack of a better term? What did y'all think about the verses? We can start this conversation as well.
Y'all go ahead. I just want to start visually. Oh, it was stunning.
It was great.
I enjoyed the crane shots. I loved mm-hmm. how the stage was set up and it didn't look, you know, too futuristic and shit. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. I really
video
enjoyed.
Was good as well.
Yes. Okay. Very clear. Even on Instagram. Really enjoyed
that. It was clean.
And what was I going to say? And then how everybody looked. They all took it seriously and, you know, he had the silk brocade up under the chinchilla and you just, I mean, a nigga approached me wearing that. I'm going to listen to what the fuck you
first
got
to say. First of all, Ron came on stage with a chinchilla. Let's just start with the fact that Ron came on stage with a new beard first.
Yeah.
Like the number
of new beard. I didn't recognize him.
The number of people I saw who were like, where is Ron Isley? And I was like, first of all, only like 3 Isleys are still alive.
Listen, I talked to my Aunt Penny two nights ago. About it, and she was like, well, why wasn't Ron on the stage? Where was he? She watched it. I'm like,
how she watched it and still didn't realize it was Ron?
I was like, Penny, that was him with the beard. She was like, what? I was like,
I think Ron has had a little bit of smoothing out has happened.
Well, you know,
cosmetically.
But as soon as he took off his brim, I was like, I know y'all recognize Ron's process. Ron and Ozzy done had the same process.
73.
I was like, I know you recognize that process. And somebody was like, yeah, now I know that's Ron. But I was like, who else? You can't build anything as the Ozzy's if Ron. Of course, you. Just by deduction, you gotta assume Ron's in the chinchilla with the beard.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. Because so, Ernie, that's not Ernie's style. Ernie's the bandana wear.
Yeah, and Ernie had on Ernie's the bandana and usually gives you a mesh shirt. He didn't do the mesh shirt.
Or a leather vest.
But he did do the leather pants.
Yeah. Ernie gonna let them nipples out, baby. It don't matter where he at.
You're gonna get these nipples.
Bandana, mesh shirt, leather pants. That is Ernie Isley all day, every day. But I agree with you, Inca. The setup, the fact that they had couches for them instead of trying to put them in, like, you know, some
bar stools or something.
Or throne chairs or some crazy shit.
Derek set up behind them. Like, the lounge feel of it. It felt very, it felt very like a nighttime talk show-ish, which I think is part of probably what fucks Steve up. I feel like Steve has never really watched Versus.
I could see that.
Yeah,
I don't think Steve's ever really watched anything that Steve was not in.
I agree with that. I also agree with that. And it was also good for the old players to be able to, like, you know, you want to sit down for real. You want to be able
to. Yeah, niggas' knees hurting and shit.
I love that there were like three or four brocade looks on stage that they didn't plan to coordinate. Just the fact that they was
my brocade.
Them niggas, like, you know, and Maurice is always going to wear Maurice. I mean, Verdeen don't never have on something that's not shiny somewhere.
So Verdeen is always dressed for a show. Even if he's just going to the store, I might have to go to a show.
A show might break out. You never know.
I would too. That's
if you stay ready,
if
you
I'm done flat ironing my hair, I'm not going to put sweats on.
I was
I'm
actually
going to put on something good.
I was surprised, actually, that Verdeen did not have his bass on the stage. I thought he was
going
to play at some point. I mean, that's not a problem, but I was just...
I thought his bass was there, or were both of them.
Well, he didn't pick it up then.
Yeah, there were two.
Okay. Ernie switched guitars when they changed outfits.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well.
Because you have to. Yes, because Ernie and Ron also gave us a costume change at the break, which I also appreciated.
Definitely.
I thought it was great to see the love they have for each other.
Absolutely.
I thought it was great to see that, like we said with Patty and Gladys, these are people who your whole life was and still is about being on the road. Like, you gig. It's what you do. That's like beyond 10,000 hours. It's like 100,000 hours, right?
A million hours.
So the fact that they still were like Philip broke out that fucking choreography at one point, like he gave that quick kick spin or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you can tell that they still enjoy, even if they weren't going to give you full voice, like, Ron's harmonizing with his own track. He's harmonizing with his own vocals on the track. You know, Ernie's letting the guitar riff rock after the music out. I loved all of that. It lost a little steam in like the last 15 minutes.
Well, because niggas was tired.
Because Steve was talking. So, guys, I really want to know what Steve's total accumulated talking.
Also, it was also 4 hours, right? Like, I think that's a long time.
They did 25 songs each instead of
Listen, it don't matter how great you are as a showman. Like, 4 hours is a long time for people to sit here and sort of and be engaged. That's just a long time.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved the way it looked, and I love that these guys are still rock stars. I keep forgetting what's the light skinned dude's name.
Ralph.
So Ralph and Philip look like some old niggas with some bread, right? Like, you saw them in the mall. They just look like they done well in life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They not. But Verdeen and Ernie and Ron, they're fucking rock stars. Okay. And make no mistake about it. When you walk in the room and you say, yo, pick the rock star out, they're picking out them three.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I love that they have embraced that they walk in that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still walking in that at this age. Yeah. And it's very easy to just sort of come out there, you know, in an old ass suit, not really, you know, looking clean and looking together, but they still took, you know, take really great pride in
absolutely
that. And I dig it, man. I think that's really, really cool, man. So I definitely enjoyed the look. I actually like Steve. I'm not a big monochromatic
guy. His fit?
His fit was clean, though. Mm-hmm. You know, listen, man.
It was very
clean.
One thing an old crew gonna do is they gonna wear purple.
Absolutely. It's Easter, too?
No, it was inappropriate. It was so, everybody was talking about Steve's suit, and I was like, this is the most appropriate thing he could have worn for the
Easter Sunday. Versus on Easter Sunday.
Green, yeah. White hat. I really, really liked the white hat with the outfit.
Yeah.
I like I said, I Steve didn't start irking me really for the first part of him doing what he was doing wasn't irking me. It was just the music fan in me at a certain point. It wasn't even necessarily just the talking, the amount of talking, although he did talk too much. It was just that I was like, bro, like, you can't assume that everybody knows what you know because you know Ron. So you get, right. But like the general public might not know they would move from Cincinnati to Teaneck. Right. And they don't know Rudy and Kelly and Marvin, and they don't know Chris Jasper. Same on Earth and a Fire.
He ain't bring up Maurice one time.
I'm like, the guy who started the whole group, like, ask him.
Like, not one, no, like Maurice's name ain't come up. That alone was a massive fail.
And what any of the other Asleys, I feel like, I'm sorry, I was there to learn about the music. I don't know how Earth, Wind, and Fire was formed.
Exactly.
And like, we're here on Instagram. This is a platform that's not for old people like you, Steve. So it'd be nice for you to not talk shit and talk down on us for knowing technology.
That was a problem.
Like,
for me.
Clearly, we're not the target audience, but like, teach us something.
But we are. Mm-hmm. But we are the target. We were the target audience for this at the same time. Obviously, I'm Gen Xer, so I'm not even really in the spectrum. But like, the problem with Steve's old school rants is multifold. The first thing is that you are participating in a platform that was conceptualized and originated by two hip hop super producers on two digital that is airing on two digital platforms whose primary user base is Gen Z.
Is young.
Right? Mm-hmm. And talking shit about everybody. And the only reason that I'm gonna guess the only reason, because Steve threw himself out here for consideration to host this. And I'm gonna guess the only reason that nobody sat in the room and said, you know what? Maybe we should actually go with like a Tom Joyner or a Donnie Simpson is because,
or a Jeff Sledge or a Naeem Hackford. Because I learned more from y'all in that 5 minutes than I did in the whole thing.
But it's because Steve is the most relevant kind of old nigga to the hip hop community. So it's like, you're welcome, Steve, actually. Right. So shitting on that. But also to me, it was like the disconnect between talking about how much young people don't know anything about this era and don't respect the era, but you're so busy talking about that you're not letting people learn.
And you just have to cut in sometimes.
Go ahead.
I don't mean to cut you off. That's not fucking true.
It's not
like that. It's absolute bullshit. And he has been riding that shtick for so fucking long that he's on autopilot. He's not even paying attention to the fact that people do know these songs and that people are aware of this music. I watched him bomb at Radio City with that same shtick.
The same bullshit.
The hip hop. Yo, he did a fucking entire spiel about rappers with a bunch of fucking rappers and their wives and girlfriends and shit in the crowd. Niggas was looking at him crazy.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, he's so on autopilot in that mode, in that you young and you don't know shit mode, that it blinds him. It's a blind spot for him.
It's definitely a blind spot.
Go ahead. No, I was gonna say, and it's offensive, right? Like, There were so many missed opportunities to talk about, because I've tweeted something about publishing, like to talk about how many samples from Earth, Wind, and Fire and the Isley Brothers are part of hip hop. Like, somebody was pointing out that Gen X, not just because the Isleys kept recording, but Gen X was like, we claim the Isleys. We don't really feel like that's old music. We feel like that's our music. Like I brought up, like I had, you know, Footsteps and In Between the Sheets on slow jam tapes in high school. Like I knew what the fuck that shit
was. Nigga, like Biggie Smalls rapping over fucking Isley Brothers on.
He says, "I love it when you call me Big Papa."
Ron said that.
He recognizes that.
Exactly.
Ron is married to a fucking 30-something. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that is my age. Yeah.
As is Philip. As is Philip. Yeah, and like, there was also a whole myth about the fact that Ron and Philip are married to sisters. Like, there were so many things that you could have thrown.
Yeah,
like,
Ron was like, celebrate my how brother-in-law
had to teach me how to do diapers again for my youngest who was fucking 14. I would have been like, tell me about that shit. You know what I mean? Like,
I knew we was in trouble. I knew we was in trouble, but I knew we was in trouble. And this is just some ignorant shit. I was looking at this nigga like, really, nigga? They played Boogie Wonderland. And then after Boogie Land, I was stunned. Steve said, you know, that's the first time I ever heard of the Emotions on Boogie Wonderland. I said, what are you, nigga? Best of My Love was the number one record in the country and won a Grammy. In 76, what are you saying? Like, you're not even.
But this is my point. This kind of goes back to he was Steve, in my opinion, was absolutely the perfect person to be able to do this. Mm. But Steve, in my opinion, is also because he's a star of stars. Mm. He does not take criticism well, and he does not take direction well.
At all. And
that is part of the issue. Steve has a long history of that is not the first time he's been in close proximity to anybody on that stage.
True. True.
Right? That True. Was very all of these stories and all of that was clearly, and we've all acknowledged this, this was him centering himself instead of allowing this group to engage. And they looked like they wanted to engage.
Absolutely.
They were eager to talk. I wanted to know what happened with the Wilson Pickett shootout, nigga. What happened?
Right.
When motherfucking O'Kelly and Rudolph it was shooting at Wilson. Right. I want to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so he apparently said on his show on Monday morning that the guys didn't really know what to do, so he was trying to fill dead air. And I'm like, but from the very beginning, they were responsive to anything he put out. The problem is that at a certain point, I believe Steve was drinking, for one. Because at a certain
point... Well, they was drinking like on the stage crazy, yeah, so I know he was drinking.
At a certain point, Steve stopped even asking them any questions. And like, Verdeen was like, Verdeen had to jump in a couple times. Ernie would be like, yeah, I wrote that. And the shit would just like keep moving, you know.
I didn't know Ernie wrote that many songs.
I had no fucking idea.
I was like, wait, you wrote that, Ernie?
And that is part of but that response that is indicative of a blind spot. It is indicative of a person who can't really acknowledge the fact that, yo, man, I kind of fucked up here. Because really, even when they came back and they did the halftime,
yeah,
and apparently he got a halftime speech. Mm. Like, instead of coming back and saying, hey, listen, man, I know, you know, I've been so overwhelmed. I was, you know, I had a lot of emotions going. I kind of went a little overboard. He complains about people. Like, almost like people are mad at him for fucking blocking the purpose of the verses.
Exactly.
You're mad at us because we want to hear from you. Like, he's like, we talk. That's what we do. No, nigga, we don't want you to talk. We want them. They could
but
be
that's, but that is, but night. That is we also, and that is also, and that is also a big part of, like, because I saw somebody else, like, kind of insinuate that, right? Like, that's kind of, you know, old black men, and we don't really, I'm like, yeah, but those are fucking rock stars. That's not Uncle Willie who drove a bus for fucking 50 years, right? Like,
exactly.
Like, nigga, this is what they do. They've been, you like, Ernie was ready.
Ernie was ready, bro.
Right.
Ernie was ready.
And it felt really insulting when he did that, because it was like, we wouldn't understand that your dream is also coming true right now. Like, you're getting to sing with and speak with and talk about all these songs with, like, two groups that you grew up with. We get
it's
that.
It's not the first time. It's not
the first time you met them.
Like, if you're going to have to be like, hey, Ron, remember when we were on your boat that time and you passed me the Grey Poupon? Like, nigga, we don't care about that shit.
Exactly. Like, the other thing I noticed he started to do, we was real far going in, there was times when Derek would be playing the records, and like, so the records are playing and Steve is talking to them.
Talking on the hot mic.
Yeah, I'm like, Steve, you're talking to them while the music is, like, what's so important that you have to talk to them as their record is playing? Like, instead of letting them kind of groove to their record or get up or whatever. Like, what are you talking about, my nigga? Like,
my theory on this is a couple things. Steve, by trade, is a comedian. It is a very isolating job. True. Very much like boxing, right? Like, you, it's only you up there. And he hosts a radio show. So in his mind, you know, any space that is not filled with a voice, particularly his, like he considers dead space. Dead air, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And he doesn't work well with others. He just doesn't. And that's okay. Like, that's fine, because he doesn't have to, right? Yeah. But he also was guilty of a very old black man thing, which is holding court.
Yeah.
And nobody loves to hold court like an old nigga with money.
Absolutely.
You give if an old black man got some bread, oh, that he's
he is never going to
shut up. Everybody gather around.
Because there is a magnetic personality with Steve. You know what I'm saying? So I can understand. I can understand why he doesn't necessarily defer, because so many people do it, but he is an overwhelming presence. And like, were they nervous? I mean, sure, they're nervous in the sense that this isn't a traditional show, right?
Yeah.
This is something new. They know you go out here, you stage left, you stage right, Ernie gonna be over here, guitars. Like, that's not what this was. So their nerves was probably more along the lines of, hey, this is something new to us. Oh my God,
I'm going
to mess up.
I need Steve to keep talking because I'm scared.
And I doubt it was even nerves. It was probably just more like, okay, so wait, how does this work? So
exactly.
When do we play a song? Like, when do we talk? Steve just needed to keep the train moving. That's it.
That's all he needed to do. But you know, you tell a nigga to give you 10 and he gave you 20, right? Like, it's just a part of his personality.
He was also mad from the door that people were like, why is Steve Harvey hosting? So he came out there.
He had a little tooth in the gate.
Because he came out there like, this is my shit.
And guess what, nigga? We were right.
Exactly. 100%.
We were right.
Because we could have had the fly jock up there,
Donnie
Simpson and his sparkling eyes up there.
Tom might have come up there, one of them old nigga suits on
with legs and sandals on.
Clear sunglasses.
I will say this though, when the second half came, and there was less talking. There was that huge section where they were just kind of like song, back. Yeah. That shit was phenomenal. Because it was like...
It's amazing.
It was like, these niggas just played Devotion, or these niggas done played Harvest of the World. These niggas done played After the Love Is Gone, or these niggas came back with Fight the Power. Or these niggas came back with,
Bro,
Written in the Stone. These niggas came back with fucking, you know, Between the Sheets. It was like, yo, chill out, B.
I forgot about Smooth Sailing.
Come on, bro.
That's how many records.
I forgot about Choosy Lover. I was like, oh shit, I wasn't even thinking about Choosy Lover. I had never heard Choosy Lover and Devotion so close to each other. I had never put it together. That Choosy Lover was based on Devotion. Somebody said it on Twitter right before Ron admitted stealing it.
You know what else? I mean, again, this is a deeper question. I guess someone expected, but one question I would have asked, which is, they also showed you, especially the Earth and the Fire, back in the 70s, like live albums. Because Devotion...
Reasons that's Live what, is like yeah, our official Reasons.
That's the version.
That's the version.
Devotion, that is the version. They don't play the album version ever. Same with Frankie Beverly. There's like certain records. Joanne Payne, the live version is now the version. You know, so I found that interesting too. They were playing the live versions even on the verses. So yeah, so that's what we thought about the verses. As everybody else thought, Steve was too much. The music was phenomenal.
It was too much. And Steve still don't get why he was too much, because that nigga posted,
you know what?
Thank you to Derek the next day and still made it all the fuck about, like, there was
even calling Derek the wrong name, DJ Nice.
DJ Nice. Nigga, what are you calling? Him Nice. Nigga, shut
your mouth. Don't. No, you don't. Nobody calls him that.
If you really knew him, you would call him Derek. Don't nobody call D Nice Nice. Nobody called, literally,
this jockey Nice.
This jockey.
This jockey. Also, she has shout out to fucking Spice Adams, Afion Crocker.
Oh yeah, and Godfrey.
And Godfrey. Oh my God.
I really have to believe, I mean, these niggas are always funny, but I, in my mind, I was like, the Spice and Afion after set existed so that this moment could happen with Godfrey. Like that, exactly. Like it's because Godfrey and Steve Harvey, oh my,
so it's Godfrey, it's a perfect, was like,
you know, it was 1939, and I was like, I was in tears. And Spice, yeah, of course, had a fucking outfit looked like Ron's outfit.
Like Ron's shit.
I'm like, what?
I don't know. I'm like, Spice, how do you have this stuff on
deck? He said he never throws anything away, but that was above and beyond.
I don't believe that. I think Spice stops at like K&G
and just pick up shit.
And just pick up shit. For like a suit be like $50 or $40, yeah, or some shit, like, because he has too many of them.
He do.
But
he,
you know, do. What? I guess his skits are old player skits, so maybe that's why he has old player skits.
He got whole player fit ready to go for whatever occasion. Yeah,
this nigga told us in Clubhouse that he has Rockaware in the basement somewhere, so he's ready with that.
He's ready whenever that comes up.
But whatever. And like Afion with his wig being Verdine.
Yeah, be Verdine.
Like it was I'm sure it's up on one of their Instagrams to watch. It was phenomenal. And the fact that Steve just don't get it, I mean, it's unfortunate, because I know even a lot of people, older people, like Steve thinks it's like young people who were mad at him. Nigga, it's us. Like, we were
older niggas was mad.
Even a lot people, of people older, who said that their moms were like tuning out and shit because they was like, I'm not trying to listen to this nigga talk.
Even people older, but you know, that's just the thing. When you know, he feels like he is the star because Steve is often the star. He doesn't know how to, you know, he don't know how to be Tito.
Nigga, hit steps. First. Yeah.
You know, and keep pace.
Exactly. He's Michael, regardless. I was going to mention, I've been trying to watch Falcon and Winter Soldier. I don't like this.
It's very good, but like we were saying about Lovecraft Country, the racism is always the worst part.
Yeah.
And here, I think it's almost too real. Like, this first nigga can't get a loan.
Yo.
And then he's getting treated all crazy when he's trying to be like a superhero, and
remember the older superhero who they basically took experimenting on.
He's been away for 30 years, and now his grandson, I'm presuming,
he's
feeling the same shit.
And his grandson's gonna be because in the comic books, I forget his name.
He's part of the next generation of Marvel.
So. I'm gonna push through, but I'm just not enjoying it like I did WandaVision. I can't lie.
I feel like it's gonna come around. So keep going.
We'll stick with it. We're gonna stick at it. Did you watch Love and Marriage? Did you watch the behind the scenes? What'd you think?
This season was weird.
I think.
What the hell was that for now? I don't know. Maybe it was because of COVID or whatever. But I don't understand them cutting out Kimmy's side of the beef that Tisha had with her.
Mm.
You remember that part? Because Kimmy's not really in the middle. She didn't do anything wrong.
Exactly.
Their whole season was just watching Kimmy ping pong between. I don't know. It was a weird format for a show, but
and it's still going. Like, you know, Martell was on the gram yesterday, accusing Mel of leaving the kids with some babysitter, and like, it's just not stopping. It's just a mess, man. That's, they got the curse of, you know, these marriages being on reality TV, and some of them don't make it with the scrutiny.
This ain't got nothing to do with reality TV. Them niggas was terrible. Niggas was terrible prior to the cameras.
I was going to say, but Ivy was totally yelling. I thought it was interesting that it was going to start off as like a house flipping show for OWN. But then the night before recording started, Mel called and was like, this nigga's cheating on me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do it no more.
And Carlos was like, oh, we got a new show here. Look at bro. I, you know, you would know, bro, because I said you're the expert in this particular field. I don't know nothing about nothing. I don't know nothing about birthing them babies.
It was weird. All four of them, quote unquote, being friends is weird.
Yeah.
Destiny really taking that chicken thing personally is very weird.
Nigga, he is a chicken. He does make chicken. Like,
and
what is,
also, we don't know that nigga. What do you want?
We don't know that nigga at all. And he wasn't even on this season. So what do you want from us? Anyway, let's move on.
We watched the Snyder's Cut too. We watched almost all of it.
And what'd you think?
I was doing all kind of other shit while it was going on.
What traffic?
He didn't finish it.
But did he like it?
He said it was alright. But you feel that 4 hours.
Oh, bro. Travis, like, pour it up. Travis, pour it up. No, I didn't think you had that nigga distracted for his birthday. That's what it was.
I did a good job for his birthday.
Thank I'm you sure you did a great job for his birthday.
Positive you did
a knockdown drag out, which is why that nigga give a shit about that 4 hour cut. And he was like, hey, I got some other shit going on in here besides this goddamn movie. I want to just mention the Derek Chauvin trial just real quick. You know, you never know, but it seems like the prosecution's doing a hell of a job. The police force is basically turned on him and said, you fucked up. What you did was not even in our guidebook, and none of us condone what you did. It feels like he's going down again. You never know until the end, but it doesn't look good for him as at this point. He's got no friends on his side, and I hope he gets the fucking, if they don't have the death penalty up there, I hope he gets the life.
I hope they put a knee on his neck for 8 minutes.
Exactly.
Every couple of weeks, just so he barely survives it.
Exactly. I wanted to end the show to mention DMX, of course, who apparently had a drug overdose a few days ago. I don't think it's been quite a week.
Almost been a week. Yeah.
It's been almost a week, right? And the drug overdose induced him having a heart attack, and apparently his brain was without oxygen for 30 minutes. Now they're saying anything past 7 minutes is pretty much deadly or going to be a huge brain damage. 30 minutes is not trying to be morbid
but
30 minutes shocks me that he's still with us now. Like that he's brain dead, but I'm surprised he's even that.
But that's the thing. He's only still, his organs are only still working
because of the machines.
Yeah. And I mean, so for me, I realized yesterday, because I didn't know who the vegetative state comment had come from. I wasn't sure if it was like a sources say or whatever, because in my mind, I was like, they've had this man on support for so long. And to keep, like, doctors will tell you if a person's actually brain dead, they will tell you there's no coming back from that, right?
Yeah.
And then I looked it up yesterday, and it looks like it was his manager who said there's been no brain activity, which means he's likely brain dead.
He's gone, yeah.
So I don't, you know, I don't presume to know, you know, if the family's still holding out hope or if they're waiting for, like, all the kids to get there. Like, you never know what it could be. They could be waiting for all his kids to come into town or some shit.
Yeah.
Who knows? But if it is true that X is indeed brain dead, it unfortunately means that, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's no longer with us. But I, just for the sake of the internet being the internet and waiting until we get like an official,
from the family and stuff.
But that's always the hardest, you know, that, like, people are bringing up Demi Lovato because she almost killed herself with an overdose a couple of years ago. When the overdose, when you've been clean for a while, that's the one that takes you out.
Because your body can't handle it.
Your body can't handle it anymore. You know, and I feel like people tend to go harder with that relapse, you know? Mm. And so, like Demi was saying, when she had hers, she was doing shit she had never done before. So it pains me because, you know, we've all been talking about how healthy he's seemed
Yeah, I mean, the verses with him happy, and Snoop was phenomenal.
Being a happy DMX, which none of us were used to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what drove him to that. Who can know, you know? An addict is always an addict. They're just an addict in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just pains me. And I think him and Swizz were working on the album. I'm not sure if it was done, but there may at least still be more music there.
And obviously, like, peace and love to Swizz and D and Y and the whole Rough Riders camp. The Lox and Eve and all the people came up with him. Because I know this is just Chance. Him and Swizz are like brothers. I know this is Chance Swizz right through his heart, you know, to see what's happened here. I didn't know X. I never met him, even though we kind of grew up in the same general area of White Plains. He's from Yonkers. He's younger than me, but, you know, I just, as a fan, like, I just, from the first album, I was like, yo, like, who is this guy? Like, this guy's, I remember arguing with people about his album, just at that first album, people were kind of, it was kind of polarizing, because people were like, oh, I don't like his voice, he sounds like Ja Rule, he's just a man. And, you know, I just knew that guy was, I didn't know he was going to reach those heights, but I was a fan from the door. I just loved his angle, and I think a lot of people missed his angle, which was, you know, the first album, especially. Second two with the first one, it's a lot about, you know, he was robbing niggas and he was this and that, but then he do the prayer thing. And I just try to tell people what's happening with this guy. It's like he was doing all those things and he was doing them for real. Like, he's known, right, and Yonkers, like, that's not, wasn't an act. He really was robbing niggas and shit, right, like that. But he was doing it because he had to. He's like, if I don't rob you, I literally am not going to eat tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sleeping on that bench right there. So I'm robbing you, but deep down, which is why the prayer thing is like, I don't want to be this person.
Right.
I'm doing this because it's survival, life or death. Exactly. It's not because I'm enjoying sticking a gun in somebody's back. It's because I needed to get, you know, that three piece with fries. Otherwise, I wouldn't eat for the next 5 days. So he just had a depth to his stuff right from the door that I really, really appreciated. I just really enjoy him, man. I really enjoy his work, and I enjoyed, you know, he had a few reality shows that I liked, you know, like back in the day when they, I just really enjoyed DMX, man, and I'm sad to see this happening, you know. What do you think, Inka? What do you think, bro?
I think hearing so much of his story and just how tragic the early part of his life was really, as just a human interest story, even without the music, makes you want to pull for somebody who's been through that much.
Exactly.
So I just, my heart goes out to him. There are, this is going to sound crazy, but a lot of really bad drugs out right now.
Yeah.
Like the amount of overdoses, the amount of shit that's laced with fentanyl, specifically in the last month or two, is off the wall. So like, if y'all are out here wilding, like, please just be careful.
Yeah,
it's tragic.
What do you think, bro?
Yeah, same, man. I have the same sentiments. You know, aside from I actually was never really a fan of his music. But just seeing someone that you would see as a peer, kind of going through that and really battling that addiction. And we view addiction very differently now. You know, probably in the last maybe 5 to 7 years, we've taken a much more gracious approach and compassionate approach with how we're viewing what addiction is and what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I want us to, you know, obviously I want to see him pull through. I would hope he could pull through. If he does, there's still a lot to, you know, it's a hell of a battle. It's a hell of a climb.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, I mean, I wish his family the best, but there's no, you know, it's a sad day, right? Because he also seemed like he, you know, last time we kind of saw him in the public was the Verzuz.
Yeah.
And we kind of got a little bit of, you know, we kind of got this vibe of like sort of a simmered down, you know, older kind of growing into
enjoying an himself,
elder statesman, you know? and enjoying himself guy. And, you know, to see this and to hear this, the next thing is that, you know what I'm saying, is you know, this is just, it's terrible, man. It's really, really bad. And, you know, You know, I know his folks are you know, pulling for him, and we're all pulling for him.
Yeah. I remember I saw him at the Apollo. That was one of the best shows I've ever seen, man. I saw him at the Apollo, I guess it was on the second album. And the dude came out and just murdered it. And he had asthma. The MS was asthma. So, like, he, like, literally, like, passed out on the stage. And they, like, dragged him off the stage. And then he came back. He came back and did like another half hour. Like, the guy was an animal on the stage, man. Yeah, so I wish, you know, praying for him, wishing well. On that note, that's it, man. We're gonna wrap it up. Peace to everybody, I guess. Shit.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, y'all. On that note,
anybody got any last shouts before we go?
Nah.
Okay. Oh, real quick, by the way, Travis Porter. The reason they're called Travis Porter is because when they were in high school, what happened was in Atlanta in general, there was this thing called white boy swag. And all the kids in Atlanta were wearing, the black kids in Atlanta, like from the hood, were wearing like Abercrombie and Fitch and like what are deemed as like white clothes, you know, like not polo, but like more like the Abercrombie and like kind of like the white brands. And so the group decided to name themselves Travis Porter because they thought that sounded like a white person's name.
Ah, okay.
That's why it was why they called Travis Porter.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so. Interesting.
Yeah, this one, I want to remember to answer your question.
I appreciate that because I forgot. I would have asked again, though, at some point. No, all right.
All right, y'all. We'll see y'all next week. Y'all be safe out there.
Bye.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.